I very much have that scientific background. I came very much from the world of science, material science, a very particular form of that. And I noticed something, you know, among my peers as I was studying, because we had all sorts of people in graduate school with me, people of different backgrounds, even different countries, and various experiences of faith or no faith in their lives. And I marveled at the effect of the study of science and what it had on those various groups of people. And I noticed that typically, and we should always make a qualifier to that, it isn't universal, but typically and generally, people who were already steeped in a sort of a more secular experience of life and who didn't have a religious upbringing, let's say, as they delved more and more into science, they became, in a sense, you know, more convinced that science and science alone was, you know, we kind of think of sola scriptura, you know, as the sole rule of faith. Well, for many, science and what can be perceived and verified empirically was all there was. And it sort of convinced them more and more of that. While at the same time I watch people of faith, and many of my own best friends who are also people of faith, marvel at what science revealed and what the world and the order in the world. And in studying material science, you're studying, you know, on the atomic and subatomic level, the order that is in this incredible creation in which we live. And I became more and more in awe of the Creator who was behind, the intelligence behind this. So it was interesting to see that the mere study of science itself could lead in polar directions, really, if not guided in some way by faith. And I think that will be part of what we'll hear today is that, you know, faith, it's not an either or, it's a both and science and faith, reason, they need each other. You know, I was worried, quite honestly, when I began my studies for priesthood because I had to do the whole typical philosophy studies first and then theology. And I thought, man, how am I going to go from 6.5 years of math and science and equations and empirical study to philosophy? I was scared to death, quite honestly. But it was amazing, the natural progression. And it wasn't only later I discovered that was sort of the ancient way of education. You first did the physics, then you did the metaphysics. Of course, the ancient Greeks never really got to theology, but I found that my natural science preparation, especially the logic that went with that, was a great preparation, actually, for the study of philosophy and theology. And I received an award from my alma mater, which was Michigan Technological University, from the Material Science Department. They did a start a new award of Distinguished Alumni. So I was in the first group of 10 that received this Distinguished Alumni Award. It was hilarious at the banquet because one after another of alumni of my university got up and they were being honored for the advancements that they had made in the field of metallurgy and material science and the companies they had started and all this other thing. And all of a sudden at the end of the line comes this bishop, you know. But it gave me a great opportunity. I thought, what am I going to say in front of a bunch of metallurgical engineers about being a bishop as a distinguished alumnus of this program? But I said, I'm going to take this opportunity. And in the few remarks that I was able to make, I talked about the fact that I am a living, standing witness before you that a man of science, a person of science, can be just as easily a person of faith. And there's no contradiction between the two. I don't know if it moved any hearts that night, but I don't know, everybody had some glasses of wine, so maybe they were a little more open. You know, I think that we don't think of this field, perhaps, this area as part of the mission field of the church, but very much it is, and it is becoming, I think, increasingly so, a true field of mission for the church. Perhaps we don't think of the world of science and those who are engaged in scientific study and who are very much in that world as part of the periphery of society. You know, we think these are the brilliant people, right? These are the people that are smart and they're researchers, they're scientists, they're They're rational. They're very intelligent people. How could they be periphery? Well, I think they're part of what we've been talking about here at the convocation. They're not a geographical or even maybe a sociological periphery, but they are an existential periphery, because these are people that we also need to reach with the gospel and the joy of the gospel. The people of science are part of the mission field of the church, and those that are also needing to be evangelized. And this is true, I think, especially of the young. Young people today are very technologically trained. You know, they're part of what they call the digital natives, where most of us are immigrants. Some, you know, haven't quite made the trip yet. You know, the young are steeped in the world of science and technology, the digital age, and they see this as really a challenge. So I think that you know, a complete faith, if you will, in science and technology and in reason, is sort of an obstacle in some ways to the new evangelization. It can be. It doesn't have to be, and it mustn't be. But in the minds of many, this is one of the walls, one of the obstacles to evangelization, is an overly scientific view, if you will, of the world. And I think a lot of young people, they have this mistaken notion of what the church believes and thinks about science and reason versus religion. You know, and I think they presume the church is steeped in sort of a biblical fundamentalism, and you could never reconcile what's in the Word of God and the teachings of the faith with what science tells us and what reason teaches us. You know, so they presume things that aren't true. And we need to take them, engage them, and show them that there is absolutely no conflict between faith on the one hand and reason and science on the other hand. But that we need, in fact, and that's what we'll hear from our presenters, we need both. Faith needs human reason. And science and reason also need the perspective of faith to fully understand reality and the universe in which we live. You know, we one of the first things I learned, of course, was that philosophy was the handmaid, you know, to the study of theology. And, you know, I think a scientific study and an appreciation of the order of creation and all that we can learn about that can also be a handmaid to a deeper understanding of the one who stands behind all of that and who is the creator of all of that, and who is more than just a creator God and an abstract force in the universe, but is a very personal God who loves us and enters into communion with us. So with that, I will turn it over to our lead here on the panel, and I look forward to a very engaging discussion.
Thank you, Archbishop. My name is Chris Baglow. Can everyone hear me okay? Okay, great. And I am from New Orleans, born and raised, and I actually teach there at the seminary. I'm a professor of dogmatic theology. And 12 years ago, I was a hurricane refugee. In 2005, I was actually at a local college as the chair of the Department of Theology there. And we had just moved from the north shore of Lake Pontchartrain, I won't get into the geography too much, to the south shore, 5 weeks before Hurricane Katrina inundated the area and sent my family and I, my wife and my two young children, to central Louisiana. From there, we learned that the college would be closed, and there was rumors that it would not open again because 70% of the people who we served and the area we served had been underwater. And I was wondering where our next paycheck would come from when I received a phone call from the president of a Catholic high school in Mobile, Alabama, Father Bry Shields. He said that a friend had recommended to him that he get in touch with me. They were building a master science center at the school. They had done a big multi-million-dollar capital campaign. And he was wondering, he didn't want to leave religion behind. He said, we're bringing in a new science faculty. We've got new labs. And I'm concerned that as these kids learn more and more science, they'll have more and more questions about religion. And I was wondering, he said, if you would write a curriculum for us on the topic. It was a project for which I had no competence whatsoever. I do not have a strong science background. My background is in medieval theology, the theology of St. Thomas Aquinas, and particularly ecclesiology, the theology of the church. But I was desperate. So I drove through hurricane-ravaged southern Louisiana and then Mississippi and into Alabama and met with Father Shields and told him I'd be happy to make a proposal, which became a curriculum, which became a textbook that was published in 2010. I thought this would be a way to hold things over until we got our feet back underneath us. And it became something that I'm very, very passionate about, because what I discovered was that in this area of science and religion, there is so much misunderstanding. And at the same time, the Catholic Church has such a glorious heritage for answering these questions, theologically, philosophically, and yes, in the sciences, right? That's what got me passionate about it, was studying it and learning and writing this chapter by chapter with one new revelation after another. I can honestly say that it was the greatest intellectual journey of my career up till that point. Dissertation notwithstanding and everything else, it was something that was one surprise after another. The thing that keeps me passionate about it is that as people study Catholics in the United States, the issue of this has reached a kind of crisis level. And I'm going to end by sharing with you some statistics from the National Study of Youth and Religion by Dr. Christian Smith, sociologist, who, by the way, his works are included in the additional resources at the back of your conference booklet. According to his now 18 to 20-year long longitudinal study of youth in the United States, 70% of young adult Catholics that he studied see science and religion as being in conflict with one another. They accept an inherent conflict model of science and religion. Of those who no longer practice their faith, 78% cite the so-called conflict between science and religion as the reason, one of the reasons they no longer practice their faith. In a different study to which I was asked to respond in 2015, a Rice sociologist, not Catholic, not even sure if she's a practices a faith of any kind, Elaine Eklund did a study on American Catholics and religion. 62% of devout Catholics say that if the Bible and science were in conflict, they would choose the Bible, which is, in fact, a complete misconception because, in fact, the Bible and science can never be in conflict with each other if you understand them correctly. And then finally, many of you probably saw the CARA study that came out the end of August, the first week of September of this year, which cited this as the number one reason why children as young as 11 are no longer practicing their faith. So it's something for all of us to be very passionate about and to begin to think about how we can reach this periphery. Natasha.
Hello, my name is Natasha Wilson, and I have my PhD in chemical and biochemical engineering, so I guess I'm the scientist on the panel. And one of the scientists, I should say. And kind of how did I get here? So as a young child, I was a Christian. I was not Catholic. And then for maybe about 20 years or so, I was what they call a religious nun. Some of you were probably in that session about nuns. That was me, really spiritual, but not religious. And then during my PhD, I came back to Christian faith, and then I had a conversion to Catholicism. So I have a pretty wide journey. But during all that time, I was a scientist. I knew I wanted to do science since I was really young. Drew like a picture of myself with test tubes and things like that. And so I entered into chemical engineering in undergrad, and then I worked for 5 years in the chemical industry as a process engineer, as a research process engineer, and then I was a manufacturing process engineer. And then felt this desire, this call really to go and pursue a PhD, and that's what I did in biochemical engineering, or chemical and biochemical engineering. Studying Alzheimer's disease, particularly the experimental data on the cellular level having to do with Alzheimer's disease, so kind of way back in the disease and research spectrum. And during that time, I just Well, since pretty much my whole life, I've kind of been passionate about science, but I also, science was a door that opened me up to God. So for me, there really has not been a conflict between faith and science. So I'd like to read something from Fides et Ratio, because I like to give motivation for things when I talk about it. So this is just from paragraph 17, and it says, "In God there lies the origin of all things. In him is found the fullness of the mystery, and in his glory consists. To men and women there falls the task of exploring truth with their reason, and in this their nobility consists." There's another part in Fides et Ratio in paragraph 28 that says, "The human being can be defined as the one who seeks truth." And so I really feel like that's been the journey for me. When I was a kid, I remember being very interested in astronomy and thinking back, all the way back to the Big Bang Theory, which was, of course, formulated by a Jesuit priest. But I didn't know that at the time. And just thinking back to the beginning of the universe and just thinking, okay, so then what else? Because, you know, something doesn't come from nothing. And that was the moment when I said there must be God. You know, I don't know if I said it exactly like that, but that was where, you know, kind of where I came. And then later on, I was introduced to Jesus Christ. And then from there, I went on a journey. Mm-hmm. I'm passionate about this topic because I am a person of faith who's also a scientist. Like I said, I came to know God through the natural world by contemplating it, contemplation, which I think is lost, especially a lot of times in science, just taking the time to just contemplate and think about more than just the let me take it apart and see what it does and see what I can do with it kind of thing. And so when you do that, when you have that contemplative process, the natural world begins to scream out to you that there's someone who made it, someone who created it, as Archbishop Sample said, that there's a creator, there's a logic behind this, there's a design behind this. And if you read many quotes from many different scientists, whether they have faith or not, who's really studied the natural world, particularly physicists, they start to see this logic, and they start to see this design. It's undeniable, though people deny it. Science without God begins to lose its compass. It begins to lose its way, because science really is a pursuit of truth. And as Catholics, we know like that the God has graced us with the fullness of truth, but that our journey is always to grow ever more in that truth. And science is just another means of understanding truth, right? It's the truth about this natural world. It's the truth about God's creation. And so when you remove God from science or from the scientific process, well, something else is going to come in and replace it. And it's going to be things like greed, power, money, you know, and those are going to become the driving forces. Those are going to become the ends of science, as opposed to the seeking of truth itself, which is a noble thing, which is worthy of our dignity as human beings. And so when these other powers come in, then you start to have temptations against intellectual honesty that can even happen with scientists. So it's really only God through Jesus Christ that can humanize science again and give it back its true north. And in Aeternis Patris, which was written by Pope Leo the 13th in 1879, so I'm taking you way back in the day. In paragraph 10, he says that Christ is the restorer of science. And Christ is the one that can humanize science again. And so that's why I'm passionate about this.
All right. Okay, so in the next section here, we want to talk a little bit about what's missing. Now, of course, this is the C section, right? No pun intended. So we're trying to be I really didn't mean to do that. Just funny naturally that way. No, so the... Section C. We're talking about strategies and ways of effectively bringing the gospel to the peripheries and to the culture. So one of the questions we were asked to think about was, what's missing in regard to this particular area? What's missing in regard to bringing science and faith and reason into a harmony that allows people to have a truly Catholic worldview? And so anyway, Natasha, I went first for the last one, so
sure.
I'd love to hear from you first for this one.
Yeah, so when we discussed this previously, we actually came to an agreement on what we think is missing, so it's pretty interesting. So I told you before, I received a PhD in chemical and biochemical engineering, and so a PhD is a doctorate of philosophy. Technically, right now, you know, it just really means the highest degree that you can receive in your field. But it kind of signifies something, right, that it's a doctorate of philosophy. But I never had a philosophical background. And science actually used to be a sub-discipline of philosophy. So again, going back to something that Archbishop Samples was saying. And so and then philosophy was also a requisite for theology. And so essentially, if you kind of want to have a language for how you discuss those realities that exist beyond the natural world, that language is philosophy. And so as a scientist, you're studying the natural world, but you're still in some form of a dialogue with the metaphysical realm. So, for example, the scientific method. It's something that scientists have to use. You've probably heard of it. And it's kind of become, you know, the dominant way of almost viewing how you find truth, as opposed to intuition, for example. But what you do is you study the literature. You have some presuppositions about what you believe about a particular subject. So I studied Alzheimer's, so I studied some of the literature having to do with Alzheimer's. And then you know you're going to do some experiments. You know you're going to test them. You know you're going to try to find something out about Alzheimer's disease, for example. But somewhere in that space between what I know about the field and what I'm going to study, I have to actually make a statement of faith. That's called a hypothesis. Like I literally have, you know, and most scientists won't necessarily think about it this way, but it really, that's what it is, because it's saying, okay, based on what I know, I believe X, and so therefore I'm going to test it. But you don't know anything about X. You don't know whether X exists. You don't know whether X is really Y, and that's usually what happens. It really is a statement of faith, a statement of belief. I'm going to use a philosophical term, like I know what I'm talking about and I don't, but it's epistemological statement, okay? So, but as a, you know, I was not equipped with this information, and I thought going into a PhD, like, I'm going to get some philosophy and kind of be able to pontificate about what does this, what do my results really mean, you know? And I didn't. or I did it on my own, but that wasn't what I was supposed to be doing. And so, so philosophy acts as that bridge. And so that's what I really think is missing. It's that bridge between we're studying the natural world, we want to know something about it, but this isn't all that there is. And so if I'm going to make that bridge into this isn't all that there is, I need to have a language, I need to have a way of understanding that, and that's where philosophy is. So.
I agree entirely. We really hit it off when she said the word philosophy on the phone. I do think that it's true. Our seminarians, I'm a seminary professor, they receive a solid and thorough philosophical formation as they prepare to study theology. But it seems to me that in our content models for catechesis, we haven't yet thought about ways in which we can teach ideas, concepts, and skills that can allow young people to see science and religion kind of almost together through the bridge of philosophy. I think that's something that's missing. I also think that one thing, you know, and I was a high school teacher in the 90s. I have a K-12 Catholic education. I experienced catechesis in the 70s and 80s, and it was a doctrinal desert. You didn't learn about the teachings of the church. I couldn't have told you, as a senior in high school, anything cogent about the Trinity, except maybe being able to say one God in three divine persons because I'd heard that somewhere, right? That has changed, and it's very exciting to me as a professor of theology to see that that has changed. My children are receiving such a richer doctrinal catechesis in just a year of any of their educational experiences right now than I experienced in my entire education. Now it's time for the new horizon. It's time for us to begin to take seriously how we fashion our catechesis in such a way that it touches all areas of knowledge. And this is not a new idea, nor an idea that's just Chris Baglow. The 2007, the Sacred Congregation for Catholic Education defined a Catholic school this way. A Catholic school is to be a synthesis between faith, culture, and life. Reached how? Reached by integrating all of human knowledge through the subjects taught in the light of the gospel. So if the gospel is supposed to be the light that shines on every subject, science, history, English, etc., we have to begin to think about catechesis not simply as being doctrinally comprehensive and complete. We have to think about how we can help young people then make it the place where they bring all of the other things that they learn to their completion, where they find out the meaning of what they learn in science, right? Where they begin to see how these things come together. And philosophy is essential to that. What is the difference between creation and evolution? If you don't know the difference between the two, you might very well conclude that now that we know how butterflies evolved, we can take them off the list of the things that God did, right? What is the relationship between change and creation, right? In general, we think, it seems to me, when people talk about creation, they talk like deists. That creation is something God did back then. I had one young lady I gave a talk to, a biology class on science and religion. And she came to me afterwards. She said, I'm so relieved. I gave them a lot of quotes, John Henry Newman, John Paul II, about evolution and faith. And she came out afterwards in the break and said, I'm so relieved to hear that evolution and faith are not in conflict with each other. What do I do with other atheist ideas from science, like the Big Bang? For her, if you explain how the universe originated, you've just taken the universe off of the list of things that God has done. Whereas, in fact, we know that right now God is saying, let there be light. Right now, God is calling us all into existence out of nothing. That's a much more beautiful and captivating way of thinking about creation than trying to find some way to prove that God did it at the beginning and just get rid of that Big Bang idea. Right? So I think that's what's missing. We need at the highest levels to begin thinking about how doctrinal content models go beyond simply being complete and begin to become compelling by linking them to all of the other things. Because when a young person finds God in the thing that they passionately love, it is all the more likely that they will come to passionately love God. So that's what I think is missing right now. And I think we're well poised to meet that challenge in a way that we weren't when I was growing up. I want to invite the bishops to, if you had anything to add or any thought. I'm sorry, I don't mean to put you on the spot. I just didn't want to leave you out of here. Yeah.
Just to pick up briefly on Archbishop Sample's words when he began and asked the question of how he found himself here. My story is a little bit similar. It's perhaps not quite as compelling. I began with a major in biology. I began with a minor in chemistry and then got very confused and wound up coming home from the University of Pittsburgh as a priest. So. Needless to say, in the midst of that journey, I had to face a lot of the same questions that are being addressed and that are we're reflecting upon this afternoon. And the real question for me then was to see God in the midst of all of those questions and in the midst of all of those experiences that I had. For me, I think in the midst of the challenges, and we were talking before you all gathered here, and we were talking in particular about the whole notion of catechesis and how compelling that becomes for all of us as we look at a way to go forward from this convocation, as we look at the needs of particularly young people in our world right now. I think a very encouraging place to be, however, is at this particular moment in our history as a church. Isn't it fascinating that building upon, in particular, the wisdom of Pope John Paul, the Saint John Paul II, Pope Benedict, Pope Francis offers to us such a compelling understanding in Laudato Si of this interface of science and faith. I really the first time that we've ever had an encyclical, such a major teaching that speaks to us and very positively about that reality. I'm so struck by the great work that really serves as a foundation for this gathering that we have these days. Evangelii Gaudium. And I just want to read something and then make a small comment about it, where the Holy Father says, faith is not fearful of reason. On the contrary, it seeks and trusts reason. And he goes on to say that the church has no wish to hold back the marvelous progress of science. On the contrary, she rejoices and even delights in acknowledging the enormous potential that God has given to the human mind. Whenever the sciences arrive at conclusions which reason cannot refute, faith does not contradict it. Faith does not contradict it. So we have this wonderful foundation that we've been given to reflect at this moment in our history. And isn't it interesting that when we look at Laudato Si in particular, where did the challenge come from this time? Not so much from the scientific community. The challenge this time round to Catholic teaching, and we're certainly familiar with teachings being challenged by the world in which we live and by various groups and perspectives. But so much of the challenge for the Holy Father's work this time round that blends beautifully science and faith comes from political ideologies, comes from an unbridled capitalism. And we still have that struggle that we have to face. I think certainly he opens up for us in the context of this gathering, based on what our experts here are sharing with us, a wonderful platform to move forward.